Kings of Leon and You Somebody. Hello and welcome to Live and Local with Bebe Lynch. Dame Bebe Lynch. I'm not going to let that go. We have a brilliant show lined up for you tonight. We have music, we have guests, we are probably award-winning radio till 10 p.m. Shall we do it? Well, I've kind of got the power. That was Snap and The Power. Hello, how are you? Enjoying the weather? Is it too early in the evening to talk about chafing? I can't even. I'm a hot mess. Let me tell you about tonight's show. We have, oh, I love this man. We have property and social housing expert, designer, author and broadcaster Luke Doonan here talking about the effect COVID has had on the housing market in the South. It's affected everything, hasn't it? So, of course, it's affected housing too. My brilliant friend Siobhan Payne... Music industry legend Siobhan Payne will be suffering Bebe's, and she will be suffering Bebe's personal playlist. And in a few minutes, the one and only Carleen Anderson will join us to tell us about her lockdown and her new opera. It's going to be a great show, so please stay with us. Maybe I'm amazed, Carleen Anderson, and I am thrilled to introduce the singer and songwriter described by the godfather of soul, James Brown, as she's not just good, she's phenomenal. Carleen Anderson is one of a kind, and she's here. Hello, Carleen Anderson.
Hello, Bebe. Bebe Lynch.
Carleen Anderson, where are you? Paint the scene. Where are you? What are you looking at?
Well, I am looking out of my garden. I have sinusitis, so I can't actually be out in it and enjoying it, but I can look at it through the window.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the beautiful trees and burning up inside here inside the house because it's so hot. But I'm Texas. I'm from Texas, so I'm kind of used to the heat.
You can
in my little office trying to clear up paperwork that I've not done. I should have done.
Hey, oh, just put it in the bin.
How that stuff kind of piles up when you have loads of time to do it.
Yeah, just put it in the bin. That's my career advice. So James Brown, who I just quoted in the intro, wasn't just a huge fan of yours, and rightly so. He's not just the godfather of soul. He's actually your godfather.
Well, he took that role because my stepfather, who was married to my birth mother, Vicki Anderson, Bobby Bird, they grew up together, and he was Uncle James, really, that's what I called him. But as a, you know, brothers and their whole kind of tit-for-tat type of thing, he was my stepfather, so he had to be godfather. So, yeah, that's how that came about.
What's your most vivid memory of him?
The first time I met him when I was six. And he was all the rage at that time, let's see, 62, 63, somewhere around in there. And he came in, and I didn't know he was standing behind me. I just noticed that I was singing for my birth mother. Used to do that often when she would come into town. So sing for someone, so sing for someone, you know. So I would sing for the people, whoever was there, backstage, and I didn't see him come in. And I noticed that they stopped, you know, reacting to me and was looking beyond me. And I turned around and there he was, nearly fainted. He picked me up and he said, "You're so pretty." And I looked at him and I go, "Oh, you're so pretty too." So that was my first.
That's just so extraordinary. All I remember of one of my godfathers is he bought me a pen that didn't work. This isn't fair.
He was one of those that would, you know, you rarely saw him because he was, you know, he was literally the hardest person working because he did work 363 out of the 365 for sure. But no matter how old I got, even in my 40s, he would still, you know, give me money as though I was a kid. But it'd be a lot of money, but say, go buy some ice cream. You know, like, give you $1,000 and go buy some ice cream. Because you weren't supposed to drink or anything. You know, go buy some ice cream.
This is incredible. Hey, Carleen Anderson, so I saw you just before lockdown happened.
You were the last person I've hugged, actually.
Oh.
Before, and I've never gotten that close to anybody since.
Oh, Carleen.
I've stayed in my house. I've been very, very fortunate to have neighbors who have gone and let me piggyback on their orders online.
Oh, cute, yeah.
And get my food to me and stuff. But, yeah, I've not been that close to anyone.
How have you been dealing with it? I think the lack of human contact is really tough, isn't it?
Well, I'm a loner by nature, so for me, it isn't that difficult because I work better on my own. I can focus and so forth. I get more distracted when I have to leave home. It's too many things to think about. I got to deal with people, that kind of stuff. But it's a long time to be away from my child.
Yeah.
I mean, I call him he's 41, so he's not a baby, but he's still my baby.
Where is he?
He's in Bristol. He's been in Bristol since he went to uni there, so he's been there over 20 years. Oh. And, we have to make the journeys, but we've not been able to make the journeys since this has happened.
Yeah.
So I've not seen him since September.
Oh, man. Have you got a date planned?
Well, it depends, because I've also not been out because I've had to be shielding in that. So I have to be careful about going out, so I don't have a date planned. I'm hoping we can see each other by Christmas.
Yeah.
if by Christmas. But
we're
going to
make this happen.
Over a year. Yeah.
I know people, Carleen Anderson. I'm going to make this happen.
Okay.
So lockdown must have been especially frustrating, not just not seeing your boy, but also this is so, you were awarded an Arts Council grant to develop your new opera just as lockdown happened.
Yes, days before it happened, actually. Everything was planned as far as doing the production development and the workshops. I have Hall for Cornwall, which is going through a £20 million refurbishment at the time. And Falmouth University, they have an Academy of Music and Theatre Arts. So they were also in support, and I was going to be using their facilities to do the workshop, so I would have been in Cornwall for a while. And all of this was planned for May, and then we found out in March that nobody's going anywhere. So that was very, very disruptive because, theater requires you to be with people. It is very much a teamwork thing with people being around each other to develop things in the production. So that was really, I had to really switch my brain to how do I get this developed online and everyone working remotely and the students who were going to be graduating. So they were going to be the ones who it was going to be 20 dancers and 20 singers along with my own ensemble, which is Orphe Robinson and Renelle Shaw and Crispin Robinson and Sammy Bechet, all of them, we were going to be touring the theaters. So, that's out. So it's taking a lot to try and figure out how to repurpose this. I had to figure out how to do this, develop it online, and try and figure out, how many outdoor theaters are left? You can kind of maybe work it around that way. So that still remains challenging. But it's amazing how people still have this thing of wanting to make things happen.
Yeah.
Especially when times are like this. They pull together even more so. So I've been, it's hard, but I've also had to learn things that I wouldn't have learned otherwise, technically and so forth. I've had to because there's no other way it could have gotten done, So on that end, it's been productive. But it is definitely difficult. But
I think I think people do it, though, as well, because it's just good for your soul, isn't it? And it's like, I think certainly what I've missed is like live performance. And I can't wait to see. This sounds so fantastic. So please pronounce it, because I don't want to embarrass myself by saying it wrong. Melior Opus Griot. Do you pronounce the T?
No, you don't pronounce T, yes. Melior Opus Griot, yes. Melior is the name of it. Opus Griot is the form, the format. Opus being a collection of compositions and Griot being the African storyteller. That actually came from my son, Opus Griot.
Oh, I love it. And it's an urban opera, ocean-themed, time travel fantasy.
Yes, it's a futuristic opera, so although it'll have classical elements in it, it's mainly to be futuristic, so it'll have contemporary elements in it as well, and it's about an ocean floor world where everyone gets along.
What?
That's a fantasy.
This sounds insane. So we wanted to play something, but I know it's Secret Squirrel. I know right now we haven't got anything that we can play from your opera, but you're allowing us to play, and I can't wait, something from your award-winning first theatre work called K Street Musical Tribal Opera. And that alludes to the new opera, doesn't it? So should we have a listen to that? Oh, Carlene, I love that. That got my heart going.
Oh, thank you.
I really love that. So you've got, I know you said it's really difficult getting everyone together, but you have got a live stream planned on September 29th.
I have a live stream planned on the 29th of September.
And what will we see?
And you will see me being interviewed for it by one of the cast members. I was lucky enough to get several featured guests on it as well. So one of them will be interviewing me. There'll be a snippet of the work in progress from it. So a film will be filming bits of it. So the opening scene is about 11 and a half minutes. So we're only going to show about 3.5 minutes of that. Snippets of that. And also me demonstrating the instrument that I would be using in the live show, which are Mimu gloves. They're a digital instrument conceived by Imogen Heap, the electronic musician, award-winning musician.
Yeah.
And you can create orchestral sounds with the move of your hand or your wrist or your baby finger. So
this is so great. This is so experimental. So it blends storytelling, these incredible gloves, singing, poetry, visual art, dancers, and an eclectic music ensemble. How psyched are you for this?
Oh, I've been planning it for years, and so it's everything to me. I hate to say, but it is. It is taking, it's all encompassing for me. So I'm feeling really lucky to have the people that's working with me, and that's bringing so much to it, because without them, I wouldn't be able to do it. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really, really, really grateful for everyone who's working with me.
It's going to be so amazing. When you, I know you love open water swimming. And the only reason I say that is, so you won't know this, but I can't swim. I'd save your gasp, Carlene Anderson. my dad was a lifeguard. Now you can gasp. I've really got to get into it. I bet, have you been, because I was thinking, is there loads of stuff you've been doing that in this kind of enforced quiet time, even though you've been working really hard on the opera, have you been enjoying that, like taking some time out for that?
I have not, because no. I live in a landlocked area, and I've not gone out because of the whole when can I go, when there's just not, like, especially now that it's so hot. But I'm planning to go out soon, because but I'll have to go like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning when there's, no one there, and I can just kind of swim on my own. But I miss that most of all, because as this whole kind of lockdown thing, because at the very least, being out in the water is always healing for me. I'm not a great swimmer by any stretch of the imagination, but I can tread really well. For a very long time. I can tread for a very long time. Bobbing up and down,
That's
but
so cute.
I love it.
Was the swimming what inspired the kind of theme for the opera?
Well, yes, because I was taught to swim in the ocean when I was 3 by my auntie, and who was a teenager at the time, in the dark, because at the time, Black people weren't allowed to swim, be on the beach in the daytime.
What?
But it was a very magical experience because it was at night, and I'm a 3-year-old learning to float on my back. So that stayed with me my whole time. And then having to get back into swimming later on, I started swimming to campaign for various cancer charities because I hurt my back riding, horseback riding, and got back into it. And it's like, I can't explain it. It's better. I mean, I can swim in the pool and all that kind of stuff, but it's nothing like being in the sea. I mean, the sea rules. There's no kind of way I can compete with it or anything. You know, I have several conversations where the sea goes, not today, Mama, not today.
Oh, please come to Hove and do some swimming and I'll watch you.
Oh,
which sounds a bit creepy. I didn't mean it in a creepy way.
That would be my next thing for sure.
Come to Hove. So the live stream is September 29th and I'm hoping we'll see you live soon as well. As Amy Winehouse said, you have to see Carlene Anderson at least three times live.
That was very, very, very lovely of her to say.
I can't wait to see you again. The best of luck, the opera. It just sounds fantastic. And people can find out more about it at carlenanderson.com.
Yes, they can.
Oh, take care.
Thank you so much.
I'll see you soon. Take care. Bye.
Okay, bye bye.
I love Carlene Anderson so much. I'm not even going to pretend I don't. I love her. Let's take a look at the weather this evening and tonight. It's very, very warm, surprisingly, with sunny spells this evening. Overnight, it should remain largely dry with clear spells, but there is the risk of a few thundery showers later. That would be good, wouldn't it? It will remain, no surprise here, warm and muggy. Minimum temperature 16 to 19 degrees Celsius. That's 61 to 66 degrees Fahrenheit. We're not even going to give you the maximum temperature. I'm sure be too much.
BB Lynch. BBC Radio Sussex.
Blackstreet, Dr. Dre, and No Diggity. What does it even mean? I know he'll know. Our next guest is here. Welcome to Live and Local, property and social housing expert, designer, author, and broadcaster, and my friend, Luke Doonan. Luke.
Hello, lovely lady. How are you?
I'm all right, darling. I've got chafing.
I was going to say, are you in a cool studio or are you burning up?
Well, both. Only because I'm talking to you. I'm in a cool studio, but blimey, it's warm. How are you? Are you dealing with the heat?
I'm dealing with the heat. I'm sweating. I've been working in London all day. My dogs are not dealing with the heat. They're laying on the patio, like looking at me, not really knowing what's going on. But no, we've just got a sort of... With everything going on in the world, we've just got to deal with what is thrown at us, really, don't we?
Well, listen, and I'd have that on a T-shirt. Unless,
yes.
But only on a vest because it's just too hot for sleeves. COVID. So, yeah, what's going on? COVID's kind of affected everything, hasn't it? So,
Unbelievably. And certainly when it comes to property, I find myself changing my mind about it almost like on a weekly basis.
In what way?
Well, I kind of thought, I do quite a bit with Joanne Good at BBC London. And in the beginning, I was giving her a report of what's going on. And she's like, oh, surely people are going to just leave London. I was like, no, you know, we're strong, firm Londoners. We love our city. We're not going to leave. But people are leaving, and quite a lot of people. And I think that because we've never lived through a world issue like this before, I think it's really scared and shocked a lot of people in how they work, how many hours they work, who they work for. I think so many people I know looking at quality of life are not wanting to be in the rat race. So in London, I think the property market is probably going to change forever, I'd say, actually.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, this could be a good thing, though.
It could be a good thing in the long term, but it depends if the government and local councils are quite clever, because my feeling is, I feel really strongly about this. I think, well, you know my absolute passion for social housing.
Yeah.
I think the City of London, and when I say the City of London, I mean the square mile, is so dominated by so many towers, so many towers that are just purely commercial. And if you look at I don't know whether you like the Barbican Estate or not, it's like Marmite, isn't it?
I love it.
Yeah, I love it too. Apart from on a really rainy, windy day, but because it's so windy. But, you know, if you look at how successful that is as a housing development in the heart of the city, I think that many of these buildings that were, you know, full of office workers, I think they just, well, they're not going to knock them down, and I can't think what else they could use them for. So I think this could be a perfect time to look at, I'm not even going to say social housing, council, good old-fashioned council housing for key work for everyone, anyone who needs it,
yeah.
The key workers. You know, if you look at our police force, most of our police force are forced to live outside London due to the property prices. So I think if someone was really clever, if I was in government, I would love to be the strategic planner for this, is to look at how we use our buildings in London, because I'm pretty confident that, I can't put figures on it, but I'm pretty confident that a lot of large companies where people do not need to be in the office and can work more productively, it's been proven, from, you know, their kitchen sink or their study or whatever, wherever they are, then I think companies are going to save, in some cases, the millions of pounds they spend on either renting, hiring, or building buildings to be flash and have the biggest building in the city. I think this will change London absolutely forever.
This kind of excites me. This because the way it was going, Londoners couldn't live in London. People born in London couldn't be in London.
No.
And well, before we get into that further, where are the people in London going then? Are they coming down to Brighton?
Yes. Have you not seen them all on your lovely beach, on your pebbled beach, love? They are coming. Well, they go. They seem to be going everywhere. Just and even, you know, the outskirts of London, the suburbs. But I think this is a really interesting thing that I've been looking into. I look at different boroughs to see what's going on. And the borough of Islington, which, you know, 25 years ago used to be a place where you didn't really want to live, is now one of the most sought after areas in London. There's a massive number of people there completely with, you know, silly money, as it were. Probably not mortgaged, have houses of £2-3 million, and that is seeing the biggest move out of London. People in Islington, the postcodes of N1, N5, are looking at, you know, Essex, Hertfordshire, wanting outside space, wanting to buy and do up old barns, and obviously they're going to get so much more for their money. So
yeah.
The amount of properties that are coming on the market in Islington are, I've never seen it, so sort of busy on people wanting to sell.
And how's this affecting, is this good or bad news for renters?
Oh, this is a completely different issue. So, I mean, it's such a big issue. I might have to talk to you all night about it, love.
Oh, I'd love it. I'm ready.
So basically, to summarise the sales market, all the estate agents are saying, oh, we're busy. And they are, but they're busy with a lot of people looking and people are being incredibly fussy. So on average, you know, in a really good market, they'd have, you know, these estate agents, and I used to be one of them, but I was a good one, I hope. They used to have queues of people outside the doors, and they would, you know, kind of bully you into times and block viewings and all that kind of thing. They're almost starting to do that again, but I think a lot of it's hype because people are just looking at their options and looking around. And I think people that work for their money, like you and I, are really seriously thinking about committing and what they're buying, and they're looking longer term. Anyone who's completely wedged up and you know, doesn't need to have a mortgage, they're obviously buying the houses they want. But the lettings market, this is my 30th year of being a landlord, I've never seen anything like it. I honestly want to write a book about it. It's just incredible. So in simple terms, if you think of Airbnb, all those properties are now not really being Airbnb let right now. So all those properties have come onto the lettings market. All the corporate lets are not, companies are not letting for staff to, you know, to travel and stay in corporate let apartments, like almost hotels, but corporate apartments. And anyone who worked in the city who had a peer-to-tear, if they rented it, they've given it up because they can work from their home.
Yeah.
And if they bought it, a lot, I wouldn't say all, are putting them on the market to sell them or to rent them. So the lettings market in London has, I'd say, the availability is 4 or 5 times more than it was come February just gone.
Whoa. I mean, and is that, I mean, London is almost a creature on its own, isn't it, in itself? It's like, but is this a pattern around the country, would you imagine?
I think in particular, because out of London, people tend not to have two homes.
Yeah.
Whereas in London, I was saying to someone the other day, we can't forget the amount of hidden wealth in London and the amount of people with an incredible amount of money, including a lot of landlords that have, you know, 500, 600, 700 properties to rent. So the lettings market right now is absolutely saturated, and tenants, you know, if I was going to rent a flat, tenants would probably take the flat on the first or second viewing. We're having up to 30 or 40 viewings, and my flats are immaculate. They're Mr. OCD like me, good appliances, high spec, blah, blah, blah. But I've never seen renters, young renters, be so demanding. It's incredible. That's why I want to write a book about it. They're asking for massive discounts. They're asking for council tax and bills to be included. They're asking for specific makes of furniture. I've had this. Yeah, I mean, really, 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 really fussy. So it's
because for the first time in however long, they kind of can.
Absolutely, yeah. So I think a lot of landlords, to give an example, the guy that owns IKEA, has a property arm, a property company in the UK called Vastint, and they have a site in Stratford in East London, where they are building, as well as some social housing, but hardly any, to be honest. You know what the score is. Mm. The majority, private, good quality studios, 1, 2, 3 bedrooms, they're about to release about 1,000 of them onto the market. And then there's more and more and more to come. I think the whole scheme is about 2,000. So I think London and the lettings market is going to be saturated for a good few years, which means renters are going to have a lot more choice, yeah. Hopefully be able to negotiate a deal where they get a better price, maybe sign up for 2 or 3 years instead of just one. So it will settle, but it's going to take some time. And I think, a bit like you said, you're excited. I'm optimistic that this awful COVID scenario, which is obviously going to go on and on for a while until there's a vaccine, I think it's going to rip some of the greed out of the property market, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
Oh, you described that so beautifully, because that's when you were talking about. So I was thinking, I mean, you know, the pandemic is hideous. It's absolutely hideous, but it feels like, I've said this before on this show, it feels like a reset.
It does, absolutely.
Something had to happen with property in London and the South East, didn't it?
Yeah. And I think that the absolute neglect of social housing is a national disgrace, which I've been trying to fight for so long. And I think that if the government are clever, or try to be clever, and do some deals with local councils, with big companies, the amount of people that are it's just a disgrace. It's honestly disgusting. The amount of people, families included, children, that are in temporary accommodation, which are basically hovels, or in awful temporary accommodation, which used to be car parks or tower blocks. There is a way here. We have enough room, and we have enough money in this country to house people that need housing. And I think that if we could get that right, I'm not saying it's going to happen, because, you know, if this just greed always creeps back, doesn't it? But I can't imagine that some of these big buildings, they're never going to be offices again, because the amount of office space in London is not going to be needed. So to create, you know, a fair-priced home for someone would be an amazing feat.
Honestly, it makes me want to weep. I mean, we don't have time for it on this show, but I will talk about it one day, because I think it's interesting, and also, you know, I don't know, I think it's relevant. But, you know, I was effectively homeless for 10 years, homeless. Yeah. And you and I have talked about this. And, you know, it's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And if people need, in the way they need water and air, a secure home. They need to feel
absolutely
safe. And it's astounding to me that people can't survive without that. Or if you do, it's living and partly living. It's not right. And if there is the space for this, then it should be. So Luke made a brilliant documentary called Dispossession. Can we still see that anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, it's on, what is it on? I think it's on Amazon, actually. You can see it. Or if you just Google dispossession film, you can see. And I made that film because I am a council flat kid. I went hungry as a kid, worked really hard for what I have. And I want to live in a fair society where, you know, what really, really, well, you know how passionate I am, or angry, I should say. Local councils in the old days, in my opinion, used to be there. Their responsibility was to house people that need to be housed. And now councils, many of them, not all of them, but the majority of them, are behaving like private developers. The government has given over all the social housing to housing associations, who have no body or over them whatsoever. Yeah. And so they are private companies, and they're playing with people's lives. I'm working on an idea for another film or documentary about how housing associations suddenly are given millions and billions of pounds of our taxpayers' social housing. It's our asset as a country.
Yeah.
And they're not behaving in the way they should about them. Or with them, and it seems that their priority is not to house people that need to be housed.
See, this should never be political, should it?
It should never have been political, but successive governments have just given over. They changed the worst thing they could have done is they changed council housing to social housing. I just prefer to use council housing.
Yeah.
And each council in, let's say, London or anywhere where you are, even Brighton, I think every council should be given a quota of how many council properties they have to keep and how many people they have to look after. And we've just messed up housing and given it over to the private sector. And the ridiculousness of asking developers themselves to do a viability study when they do a new scheme or a new site. And then suddenly, if the developer fakily and lies and says, oh, look, we were going to give you 80 social housing properties, but we can know, oh, the budgets have gone up, the roofs cost more, we can give you 5. That has been happening across this country for the past 10 or 15 years, meaning all the estates that they were given by or bought very cheaply by local councils, where there should have been ideally, 20, 30, 40% even social housing, ends up with like 2%. So all the big estates in London, like the Aylesbury, the Haygate, which were solid, good quality housing that needed refurbishing, and in my opinion, those estates could have been or become like the Barbican estate that we were talking about. Exactly the same build quality, exactly the same standards. They just needed looking after, and they were left to neglect, basically.
Deliberately.
And if you look at estates like in Elephant and Castle, it's Zone 1.
Yeah.
Southwark Council, and they sold off the estates so cheaply to developers, and they were meant to have, the Haygate estate, the first one that went, was meant to have hundreds of social housing properties. It ended up with about 20.
I thought it was in law that there had to be a certain percentage.
There is, but then the government have allowed private developers to do a viability study based on finances and based on something called Section 106, which is the money they give to the local community.
Okay.
So it's very easy for a private developer who should not be there to provide council housing, if you know what I mean. They're a private entity.
Yeah.
It should be the government and local council's responsibility to house people. And unless we take council housing back into the hands of local councils and the government, then it's a real tricky one. And it's an uphill battle that it's almost impossible to fight, because every council works differently, and it does seem that we are now treating good old-fashioned working-class people and people that live in social council housing like second-class citizens, and that's an absolute disgrace.
Can I make you property czar?
Why not? Do I get a cape? Do I get a cape or something?
You get everything you want. You get a certificate and it's laminated.
I love a laminator.
I know you do. But wouldn't that be amazing? Like a kind of apolitical position. I mean, maybe that exists. I don't know. But, because this is human rights. This isn't...
It is. A home, a house is a machine for living, and we all need one. The amount of families that I've worked with and seen where they are in temporary accommodation, the kids are moving schools, the kids are so stressed they're not eating properly. It's a breakdown, in my opinion, without sounding like I'm being a complete drama queen. It's a complete breakdown of society when we cannot house people. And at the end of the day, we're not all going to be bankers, we're not all going to be multimillionaires, and we don't all have double-barreled names. And, if you think of nurses, doctors, our police force, our cleaners, everything that kind of runs our city and our country, as you said, they just can't afford to live in their own city. And that is wrong on so many levels.
You know when we should discuss this further? Our when wedding I'm, reception.
I was going to say when I'm London mayor.
We can combine the two. We'll have a really big party that's about me marrying you and you becoming London mayor. How about that?
Okay. Well, how, I could just be housing mayor. We could have a little soiree at the rooms above Tower Bridge. How's that?
Okay, I love this. How can people keep up with what you're up to, Luke?
Just anything at Luke Doonan. I'm trying my best on social housing, but it's to say it's an uphill battle. But speaking to you, and every time, you know, we get to speak about housing and social housing is a good thing. So thank you so much.
Oh, you are so welcome, and I hope I see you very soon.
Yes, let's have dinner before the marriage.
You're so old-fashioned.
I know. Okay, drinks.
Ocean Colour Scene and the Riverboat Song. I think there's an anecdote about my cousin Billy, an Ocean Colour Scene. I can't remember it. It's not my best story. Welcome to the second hour of Live and Local with BB Lynch. Thank you for joining us tonight. Please get in touch. Text me on 81333. Start your message with the word radio, or you can call.
Call 0800 232 1045.
BBC Radio Sussex.
Now, I say this every week, but I mean it. I mean it every week. So I'm going to say it every week. I love this show. I love my show. But I love this bit of the show the most. It's like having a favourite child, which, of course, I know you all have. I love this bit of the show. So this bit of the show is, we call it BB's Personal Playlist, which is terrible. We need to find a new name for it. Maybe you can think of that. And we thought, with people spending more time at home, they might be using music as an escape, a sucker, if you will. And maybe they're making mixtapes like in the good old days, or if you're going to insist I'm in 2020, playlists. And we wanted to start a movement where you can make mixtapes or playlists for your loved ones and friends, and I'm doing it. I'm making playlists, and I invite a loved one onto the show, and I play three songs that for whatever reason remind me of that person, and I gift them the gift of music on air. This week's, I honestly can't wait. I know I'm gonna laugh so much. This week, oh, there she is. This week's BB's Personal Playlist victim is music industry legend and my friend Siobhan Payne. Oh, Siobhan, it's you. please take this seriously.
I am. Look, listen, I am.
Oh, listen to you. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for asking.
I have. They always say to me, "Don't make this bit too. Don't make it too much like you're having fun." Okay, sure. Where are you?
I'm in the country.
Are you? Finally.
Let me in eventually.
I knew it would happen. And you're having a nice time?
Yes, it's very hot.
Oh,
it's very hot. Oh, my brow.
Are you chafing? Are you chafing?
Not recently, what's that? Oh,
when your bits rub together.
Oh, chafing.
Chafing.
No, it's chafing, not chafing. Do get it right. You can get panties for that now.
What? Can you? What, yeah, chafing or chafing?
Chafing.
When did I last see you? I can't believe it. It's been years.
Oh, it's been too long. I think it was a strong room party, actually.
Was it? Well, that's where we met. Okay, so the point of this, Siobhan Payne, is please call me Blinchy because it makes me happy.
Blinchy.
Thank you.
I'm listening.
Okay, we kind of just talk about our friendship, okay? We talk about our relationship. We have to pretend we like each other.
Okay, that's going to be
luck.
Hard.
Good luck,
carry
to
on.
So we met at Strong Room. Now, Strong Room is world famous recording studio in Shoreditch. Do you remember when we met, what year it was?
No, it was a long time ago there.
I know.
God, I don't remember.
I was 20, so what, 5-10 years ago?
Yes, oh, it was so recent.
What do you remember about me?
You used to make me go to the Elvis Memorial Shop and look at unsigned pictures of dead Elvis. I was too young to even know who he was.
I really used to do that to you. I had to apologise. Shall I tell you what I remember about you?
yes.
Well, pretty much everything. So you are obviously brilliantly and beautifully and hilarious and just fabulous. And
granted.
Who was the person that had the rubber shop thing that you used to model for?
Oh, that talcum powder.
I can't remember her name.
I used to go and model for her, and she, oh, the trousers with the zips. Oh, goodness.
So I was fat with a perm, sitting in a recording studio, flirting with pop stars, and Siobhan's talcing up and putting rubber outfits on. I was full of jealousy, Siobhan.
I honestly had forgotten about that. That's so funny.
Oh, so you think that was... So that would have been late... I can't do maths. Has anyone got any spare... I tell you what I used to love as well. You did something that I still do, and I stole it from you. Two things. So you say lully, and I say lully instead of lovely. And Siobhan would be on the phone, and someone would have like a 20-hour phone call with her, and it'd be like, you know, and she'd be like, okay, right, sure, Monday, sure, yeah, right. 5 hours, okay, yeah, right. And it would go on, and on. Then she'd put the phone down, and she'd go, wrong number.
I still do that. I still make myself laugh. Not many other people, because I think I've worn it a tad thin.
We all love it. So why haven't we seen each other for ages?
I don't really like you much.
I know. Did we have a round? I can't remember. So
did we fall out? No.
Did we fall out? So I'm going to play three songs. So
if BTW, if I don't like either of these songs, I'm hanging up. Okay.
Wow, that's what I also remember about you. Real diva. Do you know what? You know Woney, Wayne Anthony Brown, Tony Brown, Woney. He remembers that, and Steve from the Corn Dollies would both say that. So Siobhan and I would sit downstairs in reception, and they said it was like this awful double act that would terrorise any
terrorise whoever came through the door.
What do you want? It's for a world beating record. Oh, I loved it there. You know the strong room, Chev? You know when people dream of their homes, like their home when they were a kid? I dream about strong room.
Really?
Yeah.
Shut up.
It's because it was beautiful. Right, that does it. So the first song. Who's the artist?
Elvis.
No, who's the artist? It could be more than one artist together as a group, I believe they call them, that you would think I would play for you because of Strong Room.
M People.
You're so good. Come on. How can I love you more, Chef? M People, How Can I Love You More with Siobhan Payne on Triangle. Were you ever starstruck by anyone at Strong Room?
No.
Oh, come on.
No.
Really?
I don't think so, no. Well, they're all just people, weren't they?
Oh, I was, you know, by all of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Don't think so. Well,
where were you before Strong Room?
Redan Recorders in Bayswater.
So you were always in studios?
No. I used to be a hairdresser.
Of course, you used to do mine.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why we fell out.
That's why. I forgot about that. Of course, yeah. So I've just worked out. I just did some maths. I just added 20 to the year I was born. So I was at Strong Room. I started at Strong Room in 86. I think you were there, and Shiner was the manager then. And
yeah,
then you
then
were manager.
I took over from him.
So what, 88?
Yeah, we had about a 2-minute pass over. We said, here we are, there's a book, see ya.
Oh, it was such a fun time, though. When was the last time you went to Strong Room? Was it one of their parties?
Yeah, it was about a couple of, probably about 4 years ago, their summer party.
Yeah.
Such
good fun.
Yeah.
So the second track, this is... Now, you know I come from a family of liars.
Do you say pikeys?
No, we do not. Siobhan Payne, you're so naughty. She apologises profusely to anyone offended by that. If I come from a family of liars, as you know, and I have got... Or it's not that I'm a liar. I don't remember if something's happened in real life or I've dreamt it. But I think... There was an artist, and I don't even know if he records at Strong Room, but I think you and I both met him at a party. If I say to you someone guessed our star signs, who would it be?
Roachford.
That's Roachford, Aries, cuddly toy.
I could never remember if it was Stephen or Andrew, though.
Andrew. Where was that?
It was a party somewhere where we shouldn't have probably been.
We shouldn't have probably been, but we were charming and got in. Are you November 19 or 20?
20.
Scorpio.
All day.
Yeah. Did he guess correctly?
Yes, he did.
Did he?
Yeah, weird.
That's a gift, isn't it?
Scorpio, right?
So then you left. This is your life. You thought, yeah, she was in Australia. Then you went to Olympic Studios. Now, my first track. So were you ever starstruck at Olympic?
No.
Who was your favourite? Who was the favourite artist that you ever had in one of your studios?
Eric Clapton.
Oh, my. Siobhan, this is ridiculous. So I've chosen a Clapton song because...
No, you haven't.
I swear,
Oh, my God.
Do you remember when I accidentally ate Eric Clapton's soup?
I knew you were a witch. No. What?
Do you remember? I came to see you at... At Olympic, and we were in the little kind of canteeny bit. I think Sunny's was shut. We're in the little canteeny bit, and you were sitting there, and there was a bowl of soup opposite you. So I sat down and thought it was funny to start eating it, and then Eric Clapton came.
Oh my God! I had totally forgotten about that.
Oh, that's so
weird. Oh my God, you are such a white witch.
You've always said that.
Yeah, I know.
I've chosen three. You've just guessed all the artists. It's extraordinary.
That's so bizarre.
Before I play a bit of Eric Clapton, can I see you soon, please?
Oh, please. Not quite this, like now.
No.
Leave it another few weeks, but yeah, great.
Has lockdown treated you kindly?
I beg your pardon?
Have you been okay in lockdown?
Yeah, I've learnt a foreign language eventually.
No, you haven't.
I have.
What have you learnt?
English.
Get off my show. Stop calling me at my home. This is Eric Clapton and Late Anne Sally. I love you, Siobhan. Goodbye.
Love you back.
Bye.
Love you more. Bye. BBC Radio Sussex.
Let's take a look at the weather. Tomorrow we'll see another largely dry day with spells of hazy sunshine. However, there is the risk of a few thunderstorms breaking out, especially later. It will be another hot and humid day. Maximum temperature 30 to 33 degrees Celsius. That's 86 to 91 degrees in old money. Wednesday looks to start largely dry with some sunshine, but further heavy and thundery showers are likely to move in during the day. There's occasional showers expected on Thursday, and these could turn thundery too. A few showers are likely Friday, and these could also turn thundery.
Phoebe Lynch, BBC Radio Sussex.
Jennifer Lopez and Ain't It Funny. I've now got chafing and chafing in my head. Chafing, chafing. It's chafing, isn't it? It's chafing. So our first upload this evening is from Jamie Dyer, who lives in Bognor Regis. It's the second part of a three-part audio drama series called The Hudsons. Part two is called Lockdown. That's episode two of The Hudsons, a drama series by Bognor's Jamie Dyer. We're going to have episode three next week. If you're making drama or performing, why not send us what you're doing? Like Jamie, your work could be featured here on the BBC. Head over to bbc.co.uk/upload for more information. Happy Mondays and Step On. And before that, What I Like About You, Jonas Blue and Teresa Rex. It's time for our final upload. So tonight's final upload comes courtesy of Sussex comedian Nathan Ramsden Locke. Nathan is a fan of puns and one-liners. Who isn't? And this is him performing a set about, date night. That was Nathan Ramsden-Locke performing a pun and one line of field set on the topic of date night. I love puns. I'm not very good at them, but I love them. That was very, very good. If you want to find out more about Nathan, you can find him on Facebook. He is facebook.com, obviously. Nathan I. Yell. That's what you have to look for. Nathan I. Yell. Nathan I. Y-E-L-L. Are you making comedy like Nathan? Well, why not follow his lead? Record it, upload it, and it could be played here on the BBC. Check out bbc.co.uk/upload for more details. And don't forget, if you're making music, Melita Dennett is with you every Wednesday and Saturday evening with BBC Introducing the South. And you can send her your music at bbc.co.uk/introducing. Jason Derulo and Take You Dancing. When's the last time you went dancing? I haven't been dancing for years and years and years. So that was Jason Derulo. We're going to finish tonight with Flo Rida and Low. But before that, I want to thank my guests. But before that, thank you for joining me tonight. I've had a really great evening. So yeah, Luke Doonan, brilliant Luke, brilliant Siobhan Payne, brilliant Carlene Anderson. Carlene's musical is going to live stream on September 29th. So yeah, I really recommend you checking that out. And I want to thank you again for joining me tonight. And I apologise again for a phrase that was used earlier in the programme. Very sorry if that offended anyone. So we are back next week. Are we Monday or Tuesday? I think we're back next Monday, 8 o'clock till 10 p.m. Live and local. And you must tune in to every Live and Local. Such fantastic presenters and such fantastic shows. I was going to say at the moment, but always on BBC Radio Sussex and BBC Radio Surrey. Thank you very much, and I will see you soon.